This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
This morning, we are talking workplace toxicity. What does it mean? What does it look like? And what can we do to protect ourselves from it?
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Good morning. It is Saturday, the 13th of April, 2024. We missed a Friday, the 13th, by a thread. So I am very grateful for that, particularly as we head our way back into school. I go back on Monday, and as we begin that last descent, as it always is, into exam season. Those of us who teach at the upper end of the age range, GCSE and A-level, you know, we've got those exams coming up. My year 11 French pupils, bless them, have got their speaking exam next Friday. So the next time that I'm on air, that will all be done. My A-level pupils have got their speaking exam the week after that. We have got Key Stage 1 and 2 SATs happening in the very near future. We have got the rest of the GCSE and A-level suite going on. A friend of mine from my doctoral cohort, she teaches at the university level and was saying that her pupils have all got their exams coming up over the next few weeks as well. So we are now in the crux of the time in education. And this is, of course, always the bit that I find a little bittersweet, because this is kind of what we've been working towards. You know, this is where we see whether our pupils' hard work has paid off. But of course, it shouldn't be. We shouldn't judge what our pupils know, what our pupils have learned, and certainly not what we have taught the quality of our job based on, you know, a couple of exam papers that they sit on a couple of days. It's always contentious, isn't it? This idea of how we judge education, how we judge the quality of teaching, and how we judge what has been learnt. And I don't think there is a right answer. There is no one answer that suits all people, that suits all pupils. Because, you know, as we know, when we plan our lessons, we think about our differentiation, we think about those educational profiles, we think about the very specific needs of each of the 30 odd pupils in our classes, and yet they all sit and do the same exam. So that the kind of terminus there doesn't always match our philosophy. But it is what it is. And I'm sure that I will say this a few times on the show over the next few weeks, but if any of my listeners are still in school or in university, maybe you are aspiring prospective teachers who listen in to get an insight into what the job is like, and you are sitting exams over the next few weeks, best of luck to you. I really, really hope that it goes well. We are apparently in the midst of a heat wave here right now. It's 11 degrees where I am, and mostly cloudy, which I do believe counts as a heat wave in the south of England in April. Very different. I quite like April in terms of the weather, because you never quite know how it's going to be. I remember vividly taking a school trip to Paris a few years ago, and we were doing the boat ride along the Seine. We were on the bateau mouche the flyboats, going up the Seine, looking at all of the sights. I was pointing out everything to the kids, and it started to snow while we were on this open air boat, which was, it was really quite spectacular. It was cold. And it was less fun when the kids started to complain. But it was a lot of fun. Tim has texted in, good morning to you. If you are new to the show, you may not know that Tim is a long-term friend here at Saturday Morning Breakfast. He was, in fact, my very first guest and my very second guest, because as always happens when you do something with technology for the first time, that first show didn't go quite as we expected. And he has kind of stuck with us ever since. But he has texted in to say that the heat wave in Kent has been confirmed and he has turned off his heating. Ah, so it's not just the southwest that is being hit, it's the southeast as well. That is good to know. That is good to know. Today, we are talking toxicity. That's surprisingly difficult to say. Talking toxicity. Last week on the show, I talked a lot about building community. We talked about the importance of community in teaching. We talked about how, you know, you need to make sure that you find your tribe, you find your people, because teaching is a really difficult job. And if you don't have people who understand what it's like, then it can be a very lonely and very isolating job. And since then, I've kind of been thinking about why that can be difficult, why sometimes building that group of teacher friends, building that group of close colleagues can be hard. And I've come to a couple of conclusions. The less depressing one is that it is just in general harder to form those kinds of relationships, the proximity friendships as adults. You know, when we are children, when we're the ages of the kids that we teach, we are friends with people because they're in our class. You know, those proximity friendships become very, very easy. They come very naturally. You just play with whoever is there. You are just friends with whoever is there. And you are friends not particularly because you have anything in common, not because they are any different to anybody else, but just because they are there. But then as you go through, you kind of cement into the adult that you are going to be. Hopefully you are ever changing as an adult, because we think that's very important. But, you know, generally our core personalities become locked. And then proximity friendships are more difficult, because suddenly it isn't enough to just want to talk to somebody because they are there. You want to talk to somebody because you have something in common, because there is a reason to talk to them, I suppose, particularly a job like ours where free time, the ability to talk to an adult is quite limited. You want to make sure that that time is worth something. But I've also realized over the past week that when I went into teaching all of those years ago, what's it going to be now? 5, 6, 7, 8, about 20 years since I started my B.Ed. I think I had a very naive view of the teaching body as a whole. I think because all of my teachers were always very nice to me, I assumed that teachers were nice people. And I think it never really occurred to me that all kinds of personality types are drawn into teaching, just like in any other workplace. And so it was a bit of a strange realization when I learned that there can be toxic colleagues in teaching, toxic individuals in a school, just as likely, the likelihood is there just as much as in any other profession. And the idea of toxicity is becoming quite widespread online. Well, I say is becoming, it is quite widespread online. You know, you hear the word toxic being thrown around in social media spaces all of the time. And I think I'm quite guilty of it as well. You know, I will say that I think somebody is toxic when what I actually mean is I don't like them, or I don't agree with them. You know, I do fall into the trap of the hyperbole of being online. And so I kind of got to thinking about what it actually means to be a toxic colleague, what it means to have a toxic colleague, and how we can protect ourselves from toxic colleagues. So that's what we're going to talk about today. It is a little bit different to the topics we normally tackle here on Saturday Morning Breakfast, because I do like to try and keep it light and positive as much as possible. Well, I suppose not always light, because I do like to get to grips with complicated pedagogy, but I at least like to try and keep it positive. But I think that this is something that's quite important for us to think about, especially at this time of year, because of course now we are moving into resignation deadlines, and lots of people who are looking to move schools, lots of people who are looking to transition perhaps into either into teaching, that might be why you are here, because you are looking at a second career as a teacher and you want to know what the reality is. Or maybe, like I've said before, you are coming to the end of your final year if you're a B.Ed or a B.A. Ed student, or you're coming to the end of your PGCE, and you want to get the inside scoop. And so people are thinking about leaving jobs. People are thinking about applying for other jobs. And so this idea of a toxic workplace, this idea of toxic colleagues, is coming into the teacher social media space once again. It always does. It always does around this time of year. It's quite natural that it does. And so because it's quite pertinent right now, I want to think about it. I want to kind of get to grips with it. And I want more than anything to think about what we can do to keep ourselves safe from people who we perceive as being toxic. And for me, that distinction is really important, because I don't know if I agree that there are toxic people. At least not in the way that we might use the word. You know, I will accept that there are certain issues, things like narcissism, like actual clinically diagnosed narcissism, that can lead to toxicity. I recognize that there are things like abuse that can register as toxicity. But I think the vast majority of people, particularly the vast majority of people who are functional adults in a workspace, are not completely toxic. In the same way that I never believe that any teacher goes into school and thinks, I'm going to teach the very worst lesson of my life today, which is why I think that lesson observations alone are a very poor way to judge the efficacy of somebody's teaching. And so I think the other thing that I want to do, and a lot of this is for my own personal development, because as I say before on the show, I do like to treat Saturday Morning Breakfast as my own therapy / CPD session, where I can talk about things that are important to me, and I can learn things to make myself a better teacher. So I think I want to look at my own personality, my own teaching persona, and I want to think about whether, you know, what traits I have as a colleague that might perceive others to see me as toxic. Because I think that's really important, is, you know, it's very easy to assume that we walk around being amazing and wonderful and supportive and that we are brilliant colleagues, but not everybody is going to like us, and not everybody is going to like us all of the time. And so I think, you know, in thinking about toxicity in the workplace, it can be very easy to distance ourselves from it and to think about it in terms of, you know, person X, person Y, person Z, they are the toxic people in my workplace. But I also think it's important for us to consider our own behaviors and anything that we might do that could be considered to be toxic.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncatbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
You are listening to Teachers Talk Radio News, and here is a roundup of some of the main stories over the past 7 days. On the eve of the National Education Unions Conference, which runs in Bournemouth from the 3rd to the 6th of April, it looks increasingly as though a ballot on strike action will be taken. An indicative ballot, in which over half the members of the union participated, showed 9 in 10 in favour of a ballot on strike action. Daniel Kabedi, General Secretary of the union, indicated that if conference votes in favour of strike action, it will be serving notice to this government and future governments rather than ensuring that strikes did happen. However, he also outlined his belief in the gravity of the current crisis facing education in an interview with Radio 4's Today programme.
There is a mood of desperation, if we're being honest. The profession is very much on its knees. Morale is at an all-time low. And of course, we can see that in the crisis in recruitment and retention. 9% of the teaching profession left the profession last year prior to retirement. The government is continually missing its recruitment targets for new teachers. We missed it by 50% for secondary teachers this year. Quite simply, if we continue on this direction of travel, education will grind to a halt.
Other teachers' unions, including the NASUWT, have indicated they will not be holding a ballot on strike action. However, Patrick Roach, General Secretary of the NASUWT, has called for the replacement of the School Teachers' Pay Review Body, or the Independent Pay Review Body as it is known, with a Teachers' Pay Commission, stating that the current pay review body is not independent, since its remit is set by the government and its members chosen by the government. And this year, the pay review body has been told by the government that it must set a pay level lower than last year and focus on shortage subjects. In other news, this week Amanda Spielman gave her first interview since leaving as head of Ofsted. On the Difficult Women podcast, she was asked by interviewer Rachel Johnson, while reflecting on her career, about the death of Ruth Perry. Much loved and dedicated head teacher Ruth Perry had committed suicide after an Ofsted inspection, which the coroner had characterised as brutal and insensitive. Spielman said that the inspection had been carried out exactly as it should be. There was nothing wrong with the inspection, but, she noted sadly, it is at times difficult to tell people tough messages. And she compared the Ofsted process with its single word, judgments, as being similar to a driving test, which no one likes to fail. This week, the website Teacher Tap, which regularly carries out surveys into teachers' attitudes and opinions, surveyed teachers' reaction to the Dame Sarah Kahn report into threats to public cohesion, in which she'd suggested the possibility of exclusion zones around schools of 150 metres. This came in reaction to groups of parents demonstrating outside schools in reaction to what they perceived as insults to religion among the staff. 58% of teachers surveyed thought this was a good idea. 48%, though, said yes, but the exclusion zones should not exclude teachers' unions or striking teachers. In another Teacher Tap survey this week, the website reported that over 20% of teachers had seen evidence of cheating using artificial intelligence. This was up from 6% last year. Teachers' views were also surveyed in an NASUWT poll that was reported in the Independent newspaper. In a survey of thousands of teachers, 9 out of 10 stated that stress and workload had had an adverse effect on their mental health, and 12% said they used alcohol to cope. In some powerful interviews, other teachers described vomiting before work and having cried at work in reaction to student behaviour and stress. This follows the widely reported news item on the BBC, which said that 1 in 5 teachers in England had been hit by a pupil in the previous year, and teachers reporting that spitting, swearing, and chair throwing were happening often. This week, the website Education Uncovered, led by the investigative reporter Warwick Mansell, reported the story of Sir Paul Marshall, chair of the Ark Schools Academy Trust. Sir Paul, multi-millionaire hedge fund manager and co-owner of GB News, was reported by the organisation Hope Not Hate, which confronts hate speech in the media, as having retweeted, either casually or thoughtfully, a number of the most extreme Islamophobic and homophobic tweets. Union members at ARC Schools have called for him to resign, as no longer fit and proper to be associated with education. And Labour MP Sam Tarry has urged the ARC Trust to sever links with Sir Paul. So far, they are standing by him. And finally, in a widely reported story which appeared in The Guardian and on the BBC and in the Independent newspaper, parents at a Boyne primary school in Aberdeenshire were furious after the photographer, Tempest Photography, issued 2 sets of photographs of the children. One, where the pupils with additional needs had been removed. Parents received an apology from the local council, which said the decision had not been taken by the school and the link to the photographs had been removed. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio news for this week. You can find archived interviews of Daniel Kabidi, the General Secretary of the NEU, in-depth discussion and analysis of the role of Ofsted in many past Teachers Talk Radio programmes, as well as the weekly teacher review on Sunday mornings on YouTube. Thank you for listening.
John there with the news, and he reminded me actually of something that I meant to say in my little monologue before we get into the meat of today's show, but I forgot about. So I will mention it now. I saw yesterday, I think it was, an advert for a bus driver role in the US, driving a school bus. In case you are unfamiliar, if you have ever seen one of those bright yellow buses in an American film or TV show, the ones that pick the kids up at 7:30 in the morning to drive them to school, they are real. They are actually a thing. I remember the first time that I ever went to the US and I saw a yellow school bus in real life. I got very, very excited. But what kind of struck me about this advert for a bus driver that I saw is that it was aimed at teachers. It was very specifically asking US teachers if they would like to drive the school bus to and from school around their teaching hours. It offered all sorts of perks, all sorts of incentives. You know, it was decent pay. You got a bonus if you did all of your shifts, all of that sort of thing. And it came with a little explanation that it was being advertised to teachers because the people who were applying to be the bus drivers were struggling with behavior management on the bus. And the thinking seemed to be that if teachers drove the buses, perhaps there would be better behavior. And two things jumped out at me there. First of all, was the reassurance, I suppose, that this decline we're seeing in children's behavior is not region specific. You know, it's something that I see a lot. We discuss it a lot in the UK teaching space. I see it a lot in British teaching social media. I've seen it vaguely referenced in French and Dutch teaching social media. But it is nice. No, it's not nice. It's horrible. It's reassuring. It's reassuring to know that it's not something that we as Brits are doing wrong, that it is a problem everywhere. The second thing that I find really interesting was that the idea was to bring in teachers. And I kind of would like to understand the thinking behind that. I'm going to do some more research into the advert, into who placed it, over the coming week. Because if we are struggling with pupil behavior, but we are also seen as kind of the pinnacle, the arbiters, the ones who can sort it out, then actually what does that say about the state of it? You know, what is actually being done to figure it out? If once again the onus is being put on teachers to sort the issue, you know, bus drivers can't deal, so teachers can come in and do it. What is being done to support the teachers? And actually, why is nothing being done to support the people who might actually want to drive the buses? You know, the ones who quite like driving the buses. And so, again, I always find it quite interesting when the solution to any problem within a school system is, let's get the teachers to do something else. I find that knee-jerk reaction to be fascinating. But I quite like the fact that the answer is bring in the teachers because the teachers can sort it, whereas we really can't. And we're saying this, we're telling people that we are struggling with this, and yet we are not being listened to. And this kind of harks back to what I said in the show last week. So my show last week was about professionalism, what it means to be a professional, and this idea of having some kind of overarching body that is not government controlled, that is controlled by teachers to represent our best interests. And again, I'm going to go back and say that because we don't have anything like that, you know, we don't have anything that is purely putting education and the role of teachers at the center of its mission statement. We don't have anything to back us up. We don't have anything to give us the training that we need, or anything like that, in order to actually solve the problems that we are apparently being recruited in to solving. And so I do think that a lot could be done. Of course I think this, because I wouldn't have done last week's show if I didn't think this. But I think a lot could be done to help the teaching profession if we had some kind of professional body that actually focused itself entirely on the needs of teachers and the actual needs of teachers, going out and talking to teachers and finding out what they want, instead of the perceived needs of teachers or the needs of teachers that best align with the goals of the organization. Anyway, I just thought that was quite interesting. And I will be interested to see if I can find out any more on that. And if I do, I will update you in the next show. But for now, let's talk about toxicity. I owe my friend Sandy an apology. Sandy wanted me to use Britney's anthem as the theme tune to this show, but I was unable to find a copyright-free version. So we are going to have to do without Britney's Toxic playing in the background. However, if you are listening, live on Podbean right now, if you are listening on Spotify, if you are listening anywhere where this show can be found, and you fancy just popping some Britney on in the background while I am talking, then go for it, because that is how the show is supposed to be listened to. That is the intention behind it. What does it mean to be a toxic employee? According to Mitchell Cussey and Elizabeth Holloway, who wrote a book, Toxic Workplaces, Managing Toxic Personalities and Their Systems of Power, in 2009, a toxic employee is anyone who demonstrates a pattern of counterproductive work behaviors that debilitate individuals, teams, and even organizations over the long term. So there are a few things in there that I think are really important for us to recognize, really important for us to talk about. The first is that over the long term section. It's a bit like when we talk about bullying with the kids in CPSHE, in tutor time, you know, whatever you might call it. A one-off incident of horrible behavior is not bullying. A one-off incident of negative behavior is not toxicity. It's this idea that this happens over the long term, almost like it's the default behavior. And again, I think that's really important for us to keep in mind, because we all have bad days. We all say things that maybe we regret afterwards, or maybe we don't regret saying them, but we maybe should have phrased them in a different way. We all, like I said at the top of the show, we all exhibit behaviors that can be interpreted as being toxic at different times, because that's just part of the fallibility of being a person. But a single behavior in a one-off incident, or a few incidents scattered over months and years, they do not make you toxic, and they do not make one of your colleagues toxic. They just mean that you did something or somebody did something that you didn't like. And that's not the same thing. That doesn't excuse it. That doesn't mean that it's okay, in the same way that just because one incident of calling somebody names isn't bullying, it doesn't mean that it's acceptable. But I think it's really important that we keep these terms professional and appropriate, because when you start overusing a term, and when you start using it in the wrong context, it starts to lose meaning. Now, you know that I was going to talk about this. I'm a linguist. It's what I do. But let's think about the word literally for a minute. It's a cliche talking about this word at this point, but some things are cliches for a reason. Some things are cliches because they are true. Literally has come to mean figuratively. Literally has become its own antonym at this point, because people use it to mean literally and they use it to mean figuratively. But people so often use it that it kind of doesn't mean anything anymore. You know, when a pupil has forgotten to bring their homework with them and their excuse to you is, oh, I literally did it, I just forgot to put it in my bag, my response is always, okay. Because the literally there used as an intensifier doesn't mean anything. It's just become a pattern of speech. And where this idea of toxicity has become so prevalent on social media, it's kind of doing the same thing, where, again, like I've already said today, people start describing any behavior that doesn't gel with what they think is right, what they think is appropriate, as being toxic. So it's important for us to keep in mind that kind of longevity, that prolonged period of behavior. That's really important. And it's the idea of being counterproductive. So toxicity is not about necessarily having a negative opinion. It's not about saying, oh, this could be done in a better way. So long as the negative comes with a positive, this could be done in a better way, such as, I feel like this is not working right now, I'm going to go away and do some reading and see if I can figure out how to solve the problem. Counterproductive, on the other hand, is where For me, it's where problems are offered without solutions. Because if something isn't working, we can all see that. You know, spotting a problem isn't difficult. Coming up with a solution is difficult. And so if it's just the problem spotting over and over and over again, with no kind of solution being proffered, that's counterproductive, because it's not actually helping or hoping or attempting to resolve anything. So toxicity in the workplace, a toxic employee then is somebody who is counterproductive over the long term. And that counterproduction is debilitating, and it can be debilitating at all levels. So it can debilitate individuals. It might be that a toxic employee has one or two people in their sights and they make life particularly difficult for them. It could be a whole team, a department, a key stage, an office, you know, however your organization is split up, or it could be the entire organization. All right, so it affects all three levels of work. And this is why it's important for us to consider cultures of toxicity and how we can protect against them. Because if we don't, then it can ultimately bring down the whole organization over a long term. They go on, Christine Holloway, they go on to say, these difficult individuals have the capacity to pervade our thoughts and sap our energy so much so that they have the potential to undermine our sense of well-being. In a variety of ways, they get under our skin, infiltrate our professional and personal space, demoralize us, demotivate teams, and ultimately they can even make us doubt our own competence and productivity. So when we talk about teacher well-being, you know, a lot of things are proffered as solutions. That's brilliant. You know, discussing teacher well-being is not toxic because it recognizes the problem. Teachers are not looking after their own well-being. Teacher well-being is not being looked after, and it provides solutions. And those solutions are very often things like, you know, reduced workload or more non-contact time, things like that, things on the day-to-day level that provide more support for what we have to do. But actually, one of the big ways that an organization, that a school, that a department can support the well-being of its staff is to look at its work culture and to see whether there are toxic individuals within the culture and see what they can do to negate that toxicity. Because, as we've said, one person can very easily bring down a whole team, a whole department. And if those toxic behaviors are left to fester, no amount of PPA time is going to help to balance that out. And I think sometimes it can be very hard to look at the culture of an organization and to say, right, okay, this amount of negativity from this corner of the staff room, it is having an impact on everybody else. But it does. And so I think it's really important for that to be part of any school's well-being strategy, is to look at what the culture is like, to look at where toxicity might be seeping in, and to figure out how to avoid that. Now, again, I'm not saying that we have to pretend that all schools are rosy and sweet smelling all of the time. You know, toxic positivity is just as much a thing as toxic negativity. And in fact, I've done a show on toxic positivity early last year. So please do go back and check that out if you haven't heard it. But we need to make sure that people are on the same team, and we need to make sure that we don't have any of this counterproduction that can be undermining to everybody else. According to Cohut in a study done in 2008. Around 23 million American employees are going to experience workplace bullying during their lifetime. Cloak and Goldsmith in 2005 did a study of 1,600 employees where they learned that over 50% had lost work time because they were worried about a particular colleague instigating a negative situation. And 12% of those people had actually changed their jobs in order to get away from an instigator, in order to get away from a toxic colleague. So again, when we look at schools, when we talk about turnover, when we talk about retention, this is something that is on my mind at the moment, because part of my EdD thesis is on teacher retention. Looking at the culture of a school, looking at the type of people that are working there, looking at the levels of toxicity within a workplace, that can aid retention. That can help keep your teachers there. Because teaching is hard, teaching is long, and teaching is tiring. And so a lot of teachers, you know, when they have dealt with the behavior from the pupils, they don't then want to have to deal with negative behavior from their colleagues. And so if you are in a situation where you might be able to change schools or change careers in order to get away from a specific person, maybe you will. And maybe the school will lose a very good teacher. Maybe a department will lose a very valued colleague because of the behaviors of one other person. Generally, this idea of retention and recruitment, that's the big cost of a toxic employee, that you will lose valued employees, that you will lose hardworking employees because they will be snapped up very quickly by another school, by another organization. But that's not the only cost. So we've kind of touched on this idea of low morale and job dissatisfaction. Because if you are just hearing negativity all of the time about your practice, about the pupils, about worksheets, whatever it might be, it can be really hard then to buoy yourself up and want to do your job. And there are only so many times you can tell yourself, this is for the best of my pupils, you know, I need to get them through their exams, whatever it might be that you do to psych yourself up when you go into work and encounter that toxic colleague. Because let's be honest, we know that we're all replaceable. If any one of us were to leave our schools right now, another teacher could step into our place pretty much immediately. And so if you have low morale, or if you have an employee, if you have a member of your department with low morale or job dissatisfaction, and one specific person or a couple of specific people are responsible for that, it would be very easy for that person with low morale to find another job, to go elsewhere, to go somewhere that they will feel satisfied, that they will feel valued, that they will feel wanted. Toxic employees can lead to a loss of productivity. Because if you see a teacher who doesn't do what we all think a teacher should do, if they don't do any marking, if they don't do any planning, if they are always conveniently sick on parents' evening, then other people are going to look at that and go, well, they're getting away with not doing these things that are a core part of our job, so why should I do them? And again, morale, satisfaction, it's all linked to productivity. And I think that's something that quite often we overlook in teaching, because again, the assumption is always teachers do it for the kids. And we do, you know, we always try to do our best lessons, do our best words, do our best quality of marketing to plan an outstanding plenary, whatever it might be, for the pupils in our care. But ultimately, they are not the only factor of why we are in a job. And if you've got somebody who is constantly undermining over a long period of time, that's going to drive down that morale, that not even doing it for the kids is going to compensate for anymore. And again, I think this is something that organizations at the managerial level need to think about. You know, do senior leadership teams say to their staff, keep in mind that we're doing this for the children? Because if they do, they've kind of overlooked the other human elements of this job. They've overlooked the other reasons that we do the job. And everything needs to be in balance. Toxic employees can lead to decreased quality of individual and team work. One person can very easily split a team apart, and you can find that a team that had previously worked very well together no longer does. And in many schools, particularly where, particularly in secondary, I'm going to say, where your department is quite often your immediate team, you need that co-working, you need that cooperation in order to function properly. You know, you need to be able to share resources because that's going to save some time. You need to be able to share ideas on the most effective but time-efficient way to mark, for example. And if there is then no sense of cohesion in that team, there are going to be fewer of these professional conversations happening. There is going to be less time to meet or less inclination to meet. And so you're not going to learn from your colleagues. You're not going to pass on your expertise to your colleagues. You're going to stagnate. And I think it's a shame if teams, departments are allowed to stagnate or allow themselves to stagnate due to the behavior of one specific individual. A survey by Cloak and Goldsmith in 2005 suggested that 24 to 50% of managerial time can be lost due to dealing with interstaff conflict because of a toxic individual. And again, that is time that those staff members, that those senior leaders could be spent looking at children's behavior, looking at a marking policy, looking at an equity of work policy, whatever it might be. And they're not doing that. They're not able to do things that benefit the organization as a whole because of the behavior of one specific person. I've already mentioned increased turnover, but I didn't give you the statistic. Reports suggest, reports from kind of HR companies, suggest that workplaces with toxic employees can have a 1.5 to 2.5 bigger turnover, multiplied turnover, increased turnover, than those that don't. And many times it's the most talented, the best, in inverted commas, employees who leave. And it is quite common that the toxic employee stays. And sometimes this is because the toxic employee believes in the ethos of the company, but they express their support for the company in what is perceived to be a toxic way. Sometimes it's because they are self-aware enough to know that their toxicity will not be tolerated elsewhere, whereas it is being tolerated in their current organization. So it's very rarely the toxic employee that leaves. And I think that's really important for leadership teams to keep in mind. It can lead to unnecessary restructuring. Again, this is not so much an issue in schools where we don't have the same structure as businesses, despite the fact that our leadership structures are the same, but that's a whole other show. But it can lead to people being bounced around because they don't necessarily want to work with the toxic colleague. It can lead to people choosing a less convenient after-school activity slot for them to offer because they don't want to work with somebody. It could lead to losing an offered activity, an offered sport, an offered art, because somebody doesn't want to have the toxic colleague supervising with them. And so, again, this is something then that impacts the pupils because it means that our offering to them is greatly decreased. The cultural capital is greatly decreased. It can lead to increased absenteeism, which is, of course, a problem for all schools at the moment because it's really difficult to get supply teachers. But that also then has a knock-on effect on the NHS because there are then the costs related to dealing with people who are signed off with stress. You know, there's the costs of booking them appointments with their GP. There's the costs of writing fit notes and all that sort of thing. It can have a poisonous effect on the entire culture of a school because the toxic behavior, the toxicity starts to appear normal. It becomes that the toxic behavior is no longer an outlier, but it is the ethos of the school, particularly if some of the more well-meaning people have left. That then means that toxic people, people who display toxic traits, will be attracted to the jobs that are becoming vacant, and that then becomes a bit of a cycle of toxicity. And so if you are not careful, the whole ecosystem of your business, the whole ecosystem of your school can become toxic because of the type of people who are attracted to that environment. It also has a lasting effect even after the toxic employee has gone, because it becomes a normal part of the culture, because it has been deemed to be acceptable, because other people have seen that toxic person get away with not doing the entirety of their job, and so they start doing it. So it is amazing how the behaviors of one or two people can have such a huge lasting impact on an organization. But it can. And it's really, really important to nip it in the bud. But what does it mean to be a toxic employee? Because, you know, I've been banding this term around, I've been talking about it as if we all understand it, but as I've already said, it's used a lot, particularly in social media, to mean somebody I disagree with, somebody I don't like, somebody whose morals don't align with mine. And that's not quite good enough. We do need a very specific, a very clear definition of what it means to be toxic. So again, Christine Holloway, they came up with three signature behaviors, or they've identified three signature behaviors of toxic individuals. The first is shaming. So a toxic colleague, a toxic employee will humiliate their colleagues. They will often single them out and they will attempt to ostracize them. So clique forming, bullying I suppose, because it's going to be over a long period of time. They will take pot shots at them. They will use sarcasm to undermine them. And they will kind of aim any mistakes at this one person. So they will have a person, maybe two people, maybe three people, who are kind of the targets of their toxicity. And they will use those shaming behaviors all aimed at those one, two, three people. And quite often this is done in a way of making themselves look better. So they will take a mistake that they've made and they will aim it at somebody else. I didn't plan my lesson thoroughly, so it didn't go very well. But what I'm actually going to do is blame the person that made the worksheet that I used, because I didn't bother to make my own. All right. So it's that sort of thing. And again, that's not to say that anytime you call out a mistake that somebody has made, that anytime you make a sarcastic comment, you are being toxic. Because again, remember, this is sustained over a long period of time. So that's shaming. Then there's passive hostility. So this is number two. Passive aggressive behaviors, distrust of other people's opinions, being territorial. And we all know that teacher who hates other people going into their classroom, who gets really annoyed whenever the whiteboard rubber is 1 inch away from where it was when they were in there. Verbal attacks when receiving negative feedback, and not having a sense of their own toxicity. What is not very clear is whether these people genuinely don't see themselves as toxic, or whether they play the part and they kind of try and downplay their behavior because they know full well what they're doing, but they don't want to be seen as being toxic. Because a lot of these toxic behaviors do actually boil down to not the organization and not their colleagues, but how the toxic person themselves wants to be seen, wants to be perceived. Finally, there is team sabotage. So that's surveillance of the team, having this strange understanding of what is going on, an unnecessary understanding of what is going on. Constant meddling or pot stirring, going from person to spread a rumor, to talk about a mistake. Abuse of authority, ostracizing members who do not support their ideas and being highly loyal to the people who do. So a toxic colleague likes an echo chamber. A toxic colleague will like to keep around the people who agree with them, who kind of feed into their toxicity, and they will ostracize people who don't. In Surviving the Toxic Workplace in 2010, Dura said that 87% of respondents to a survey agreed or strongly agreed that the climate of a place changes when the toxic person is present. So if you've ever had a colleague who was called in sick and your first reaction has been, oh, thank God, and not, oh, I hope they're okay, and you've then had like the greatest work day of your life when they've not been there, it's possible that that person is a toxic colleague. Not necessarily. Maybe you've just had an argument with them and you are needing some time to cool off before you make up with them. But, you know, just something to think about. Now, the difficulty with this is something that I've already touched on, and it's this idea that toxic individuals actually do stay in their workplaces for a very long time. People do put up with them. People do tolerate them. And quite often, if somebody from the outside, maybe somebody from a different department, maybe a new colleague meets the toxic person for the first time, their reaction is usually one of disbelief, because they kind of go, why is this person allowed to get away with this? Why is this person allowed to say these things? And we've got to have a think about what that says about the culture of the workplace. If you've got somebody who is new to your school, they come in on the school induction day, they do it, they have a lovely day, then they're in the staff room on the first day of term and they encounter a toxic person, and their immediate reaction is, well, hold on a minute, why is this person allowed to be this way? Why is senior leadership tolerating this? They may begin to regret their decision, and they may... It may plant the seed in their mind of looking elsewhere. So again, it's not always it's not always the long-term employees that are put off by the toxicity of colleagues. It can be brand new people. It can be brand new people. Organizations themselves can create atmospheres in which toxic people, toxic colleagues thrive. And a toxic colleague will thrive in a workplace where the leader of the organization protects and or enables them. And that can be active. It can be actively saying, oh no, he's a great employee, you know, it's all in your mind. Or it can be passive enabling by not doing anything about it, by not doing anything to deal with the toxic colleague. Toxic individuals thrive when the person in charge of them bows to their power. When they are allowed to get away with things. When, for some reason, the toxic colleague has more of a say in the school than they ought to, than their position gives. And the toxic person can also thrive if the leader places high value on their productivity, skills, or expertise. Which, of course, is not to say that if you are valued by your leadership team, that makes you a toxic employee. But I think it's important to recognize this, because sometimes we can talk about toxicity and we can assume that a toxic person is not a good teacher. We can assume that a toxic colleague is not good at their job. And that's not true. You can be a toxic colleague and still be a good teacher. And I think it's quite easy in our society, it's quite common in our society to equate like moral purity, moral goodness with the quality of your work. Good people produce good work. But of course, that's not how the world works. That's not true. And it can be quite a difficult mindset to shift. Sometimes organizations make the mistake of passing the toxic individual around. Now, like I've already said, this is not necessarily a big issue in schools. But it could be. If the toxic colleague has many specialisms, you know, if they are a very clever person and they have multiple degrees and so they can teach multiple subjects, they might be passed around from department to department in order to try and minimize the damage that they have in one specific place. But what that actually does is it maximizes their destructive reach, because it means that more departments, more teams are being impacted by their toxicity. And even if the toxic person is fired or leaves of their own volition, it can take a while for the team to recover because they have learnt dysfunctional ways of interacting. They've learnt dysfunctional ways of coping. And those behaviours take a long time to shift once the toxic person has gone. So what can we do to protect organizations from these toxic colleagues? What can leadership teams do? What can HR people do in order to stop this negativity, stop this distraction? Well, once again, in the same way that toxic colleagues can infect at three levels, protection can happen at three levels: at the individual level, at the team level, at the organizational level. And for the highest probability of success, all three levels must be used. And ideally, you start at the top. So you start at the organizational level, then you go down to the team level, and then you rely on individuals to implement their strategies, which is quite often the reverse of what actually happens. Because most people, if they're dealing with a toxic colleague, they will try and manage their own behavior first. They will try and come up with their own coping strategies first before going in and complaining to management. But it should be organizational, team, individual, because if this is tackled at an organizational level, then it's less likely for toxic behavior to be tolerated at a team and individual level. So at an organizational level, the research finds that organizations with a very clearly defined, concrete set of values that are behaviorally specific have the fewest problems with toxicity. Because if you have got a very defined work culture, and if when you interview people, you are able to point to them to your work culture policy and say, this is what it means to be a teacher at our school, then they know what they're getting themselves into. They know what they are signing up for. Because we've all been in a situation where we've taken a job and been very excited about it, and then it turns out that the values of the place we are working do not align with our own. The priorities do not align. And that is okay, you know, because everybody has different priorities. And it's okay to search for an organization, to search for a workplace where your priorities do align. And so if the organization itself is very clear on, for staff, this is what we are prioritizing, then somebody who goes to an interview can decide whether or not they wish to be a part of that. And what that means is people who kind of become toxic colleagues because they don't like the way that things are run, because their values don't align, they will be able to go, oh, actually, no, this is not the place for me, but thank you for offering me the interview. And so they end up not being hired, and so will not become toxic, because they can then go and find somewhere that does evaluate with their morals, with their ethics. And if they still take the job and begin to display those toxic behaviors, then the management has a very clear policy where they can say, well, actually, you adhered to this. You said this was okay. You signed here to say that you were going to abide by these principles, and you're not. And so that then gives them a chance to reevaluate their behavior, because they might not know that what they are doing is being toxic to their colleagues. They might, but they might not. And it gives them the chance then to reassess, to reevaluate, to realign, and to find a different job if they need to. But this policy, these policies, they need to be specific so that there are minimized opportunities for misinterpretation. there will never be no opportunity for misinterpretation, particularly if the colleague is pathologically toxic, because they will look to deliberately misinterpret a policy. And, you know, everybody interprets things in different ways. But if a workplace ethos is very clearly set out in writing, then there are fewer opportunities to misinterpret it. And these values, they do need to involve consequences of what happens when the individual does not live up to the expectation of them. Again, it's like with the kids. You're going to do this, and if you don't do this, this is going to happen. And the thing is, you know, we're adults as employees. We should be able to work sensibly, work productively without some kind of behavior policy. And we can. But what this kind of policy does is it just makes it very clear what is expected. It makes it very clear what the organization wants. And that then empowers us as the employees, us as the individuals, to figure out whether or not what the organization wants aligns with what we want. So that's how the organization can deal with it. Within the team, Cohen in 2007 says that a good team may still have conflict within it, but if there is conflict between two people, they talk to each other at the earliest possibility, the earliest opportunity, and that conversation is calm and it's collected and it seeks resolution instead of blame. And I think, you know, again, this is something that we deal with our children. If two children out on the playground have an argument, we will sit them down, we will try and have them talk to each other. And yet that doesn't always happen in the workplace. Now, sometimes that's just because there isn't time. Sometimes that is a self-preservation exercise, a self-preservation activity. Sometimes you might think, oh, actually, I don't trust myself to talk to this person. I may say something that I will regret. I might say something that will make this whole thing worse. But if you've got a good team, and if you have got strong leadership from your team leader, from your head of department, your curriculum coordinator, whatever it might be, then you should, I think, you should want to resolve these issues. Because again, there should be the understanding that everybody just wants to have a nice place to work. Everybody just wants to have a positive experience while they are at work. And so we will do whatever we can in order to resolve it. And I think it's important for, at team level, the team to be proactive rather than reactive. I think when it has become clear that a member of the team is displaying toxic behaviors, and remember, this has to be prolonged over a period of time, you don't then wait for them to do something else before tackling it. You try to tackle the behavior before something else happens, because you never know at what point one behavior will tip a member of your team over the edge and you will lose that person. And then at the individual level, you must make sure that you are looking after yourself. If you have a toxic coworker, you must make sure that you are prioritizing your own well-being, whatever that looks like. You don't have to tackle the toxicity yourself. Unless the toxic coworker works under you, unless you are their direct line manager, you do not need to tackle it, because that can quite often exacerbate the situation. That can make it worse. You go to the person whose responsibility it is to tackle it, and you let them deal with it, because they have had the training, they have had the pay increase, and they have the clout within the organization to deal with it. If you are dealing with somebody who is particularly toxic in the workplace, and you feel that you are a person who is being a target of their toxicity, then make sure that you document things. Because a strong paper trail that can tell a story can lead to resolution of the issue. All right. So again, just like we do with the kids, if you feel like you are being victimized by a toxic colleague, then report it. But keep a journal, keep a diary, whatever, where you don't emotionally react to what's going on. You just write in very plain terms. This person said this to me today. You quote it if you can quote it. I reacted in this way. Even if it doesn't make you look very favorable, you know, if you're at the end of your tether and you kind of bit back, say that, be honest. Because if this is a repeated pattern of behavior from this toxic person, and there are ramifications that the organization can put in place, you know, if the person can be let go, if the person can be put on some kind of probation, then your documentation will make that easier for your HR department to do. We are coming to an end slightly earlier today for logistical reasons. So that's where I'm going to leave it. But hopefully what we have done, or what I certainly have done for myself, is clarified what actually makes a toxic coworker, clarified where sometimes our own behaviors might be interpreted as toxic, even if they're not, because remember, it's only toxic if it's over a prolonged period of time. And we thought about strategies that you might do if you have a toxic coworker that you need help, that you need intervention with. Ultimately, we spend so much time at work that it's important to be happy. And if there is one person in particular who is making you unhappy, then that should be resolved. Because your happiness, your well-being, your self-worth is important. Thank you, Tim. Tim texted in to say that the show was thought-provoking as ever. Thank you. Well, thank you for listening. I do always appreciate your feedback. I always appreciate what you have to say. Thank you to everyone who has tuned in today, for everybody who has commented, for everyone who has engaged. There is no show from me next week because I am teaching, so I will see you in 2 weeks' time. Have a great rest of your weekend, have a great couple of weeks, and I will speak to you all soon. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.